Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Coming up on Therapy.
Around intermittent fasting, there's been a lot of noise. So there is a wrong way of doing intermittent fasting. There's a right way.
Oh.
A lot of my patients come to me and say, Dr. Parikh, I do intermittent fasting. I do 14, 16 hours, but I'm still not losing weight. I still not, you know, I'm not getting the results. So my first thing is I want to make it very clear. Fasting does not mean dieting. You are not supposed to cut calories. That is not the point of intermittent fasting. You're just shrinking the time in which you're eating. Does not mean you're cutting down on calories, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the mistakes people make, they wake up and they're like, I'm not really that hungry. Why am I wasting my time with breakfast? I'm just going to skip it.
Like, that's what I used to do. Right? You're saving your calories for later.
Yes. You skip breakfast, right? Mm-hmm. And then lunch comes around. You're like, I'm starting to get hungry, but you know what? I got willpower. I'm going to just eat a salad. I'm going to be good today. I'm just going to eat a salad, right? So you get your big salad, you eat it. And then 3 or 4 o'clock comes around. You're like, I am starving. Like, mm-hmm. give me a cookie now,
yes.
right? You get hangry.
Yes.
And then dinner comes around and there goes all the real power because your body's literally been starving the whole yes. day.
Hey, senorita, really nice to meet ya.
I was always calculating calories and macros. And when I just calmed the F down, I found my physical ideal. Am I addicted to moderate drinking?
You're very subtly admitting powerlessness and unmanageability right here alive. And I'm proud of you. That's beautiful.
Did you struggle with actual eating disorders?
Anorexia and bulimia.
Wow. Thank you for saying that.
Katie Couric. Nothing screws up a kid more than having a parent on top of that kid all the time.
Kenya Moore.
Before I take a shower, I would always step on a scale. And I saw my daughter starting to do that. Like, she doesn't know how to even read the numbers, but yeah. she saw me doing it.
Actress Melissa Joan Hart.
I remember the first time I was told I could be a movie star if I lost 10 pounds when I weighed 103.
Pinky Cole, were you high when you came up with the name?
I was very high.
This is Therapy. This week on Therapy, it's Dr. Chidi Parikh, one of the leading integrative medicine physicians in the country. She's the founder of Integrative Health and Well-Being at Weill Cornell Medicine, New York Presbyterian Hospital. Her first book, Intentional Health, Detoxify, Nourish and Rejuvenate Your Body into Balance, empowers people to take charge of their health. Dr. Parikh combines ancient wisdom with cutting-edge science. It is so fascinating. I want to get into all of the 7 ancient secrets that affect our health, our circadian rhythm, our metabolism, our gut microbiome, stress. I know that she was inspired to write this book after traveling around the world and seeing how other parts of the world live. And also from being on the front lines of COVID, she got long COVID herself. Her goal is to bring your body into a healthier state of balance, giving you a better chance to ward off disease. And she says health is not about perfection. It's about balance. Amen. Please do me a favor and hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this episode. And please take 2 seconds and leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help me so much and it will help other people find the show. Here is my episode with Dr. Chidi Parikh. So you spent your childhood in India where food was medicine. Can we start there?
Absolutely. So, you know, growing up in India, my perspective on health and wellness, especially as a child, as a teenager, was very much skewed to what I saw my family do, right? So I still remember, and anytime I got sick, my grandma would literally just take me to the kitchen, open the spice box, and just concoct something, and somehow I would be better. Mm-hmm. I wasn't used to going to the doctors as much, or, you know, obviously took antibiotics when needed, but most of the time we're able to handle things, you know, within whatever's in the kitchen. So using food and spices and herbs. So that's just what I grew up with. And it just seemed very natural to me. You know, that's just what you do. So that's why, you know, that's some of the elements that I like to bring into my practice. But it wasn't until I really traveled as an adult. You know, I spent a year traveling across Asia before I started medical school, just backpacking and seeing the world. That's when I experienced, you know, what it was like to really be healthy. you know, it was so much more than just like the blood test and the CAT scan and the way of thinking about health versus how to, you know, be part of a community, how to enjoy the social connection, how to be one with nature, how to bring not just the body, but the mind and the spirit into that equation of health. So that's what really opened my eyes to what the possibility of health could be. And that's what I try to do in my practice. And that's what the book is really about.
Absolutely. And you say you want your patients to come to you to stay healthy, not just when they're sick. And like you said, it's a whole holistic approach. Like there's so much that goes into it with like stress, and it's not just being reactionary. It's not reactionary medicine. It's looking at your food, looking at when you're eating, not just what you're eating. And you can prevent some of these things that you're going to your doctor for. You talk to your patients about setting health intentions. You sit down with your patients, and we don't see that a lot in modern medicine.
Time is a luxury for sure when it comes to medicine. And we've all experienced this. You know, I've been on the other side of being a patient and had like 2 minutes to tell my story, walk out with a prescription, and you're just like, wait, what happened? Right?
Yeah.
So I recognize that to develop that connection with my patients, I need time, right? They need time to tell their story. I need time to absorb it, analyze it, get to know them, because two people can walk into my office with the same chart, with the same diagnosis, right? But how I approach them, how I get to know them, what the treatment is would depend on our conversation, not just a diagnosis that was put on them. So treating people and where they're coming from is far more important than just a disease or a diagnosis. And that just cannot happen in 5 minutes. It takes time. A lot of times when it comes to health, we are bombarded with information, right? Mm-hmm. We are exposed to, you know, constant things that are being sold to us for in name of health and wellness on social media, to, you know, TV commercials, to even magazines. Everything we're looking at is selling us a picture of health. And what that selling, you know, what that image is not necessarily what we are looking for. Mm-hmm. So often we're not intentional, we're not conscious about what health truly looks like for me. We're just trained to sort of chase an idea that someone else is setting for us, right? So that's where that dyssynchrony between what we truly want to what we're forcing ourselves to do, that's when a lot of sort of, you know, resolutions go awry, or that ups and downs, right? That really happens because we're not being intentional. So being intentional is, first of all, asking the question, what does health truly look like for me, mm-hmm. right? It's not about just, you know, getting a six pack or training for a marathon or being a certain size or a weight or looking a certain way. It's not about that. It's about what it feels to be healthy for me. And that's going to be different for everyone. So when we start our health journey by asking that question and setting that intention, it completely transforms our choices. You know, what the next steps we're going to address will purely be determined by the intention we're setting. So it's almost like putting instructions in GPS, right? Like if we know where we're going, then the journey becomes easy. If we don't know where we're going, we're going to get lost. We're going to keep going around in circles and waste our time and energy. So let's be intentional. Let's direct our body and our mind in the direction where we want it to go, which is towards optimal health and wellness.
You could tell you're like so lit up and passionate about it. Like obviously a book was going to come out of you. Not only are you practicing medicine, but let's talk about the inspiration for the book. You're practicing medicine on the front lines during COVID.
Yeah, being in New York, you know, obviously we got hit really hard very early on. So early on in April, I joined the front lines, taking care of some of the sickest patients in the ICU. And I got COVID, and it was a very scary time because we didn't even know what this disease was. Mm-hmm. And that I saw the worst of it, right? So it was a scary time. And it also happened to be a time I was supposed to get married in May 2020. So
I didn't even know that part.
Yeah. The week I started working in the hospital was the week I was going on my bachelorette party to Mexico, right? Oh, and obviously it was a very different scenario at that time. So it was just a time that all of us were grappling with like, what the hell is really going on? And then I got sick with COVID and I didn't really have time to recover. It was just like a few days and you've got to go back, right? And then it wasn't until about a month or two when I had a moment to myself to really think what was going on with me. And I recognized, hey, I'm like losing weight, you know, I'm getting short of breath, just like going up a flight of stairs where I could do, you know, really strong, you know, yoga or exercise for an hour and not even have any issues. Mm-hmm. So I was like, something's not right.
Was it like your and hair falling out or something?
In chunks, hair falling out, weight loss, appetite was gone. It just, I was like, what is going on, right? It's more than just a stressful reaction. It was like, no, this is something else. So, I mean, I researched all different studies and books and medical books and all of this, and I could not find an answer because, you know, at that time we had no awareness. This is long COVID. I didn't know that. No one knew that. So, and I was like, all right, I know Eastern medicine can have an answer because it doesn't treat a disease. It treats a root cause. Mm-hmm. So I embraced this ancient detox ritual called Panchakarma, which comes from Ayurveda, which goes back thousands of years. So this is a science that yogis use to stay healthy.
Is this the book that popped up on Amazon?
Yes. Okay. So how did I even like come about this? Because I was at Amazon buying toilet paper like everyone. And all of a sudden this recommendation for a book came up about 185-year-old yogi, which I talk about in the book. You know, so I was like, how did this pop up? I wasn't buying any books on Amazon. You know, if you look at my list on Amazon, it's very boring. I have no explanation to this day why this popped up. It was an out of print book. There was like one used copy someone was selling. It wasn't even like a book that Amazon was selling. So I found the book and I read it. And that really kind of flipped on a light switch in my head and saying, no, this sounds very similar to Panchakarma, which I learned when I learned Ayurveda. So I was like, all right, let me just try it. What's the downside, right? So for 1 month, I tried this detox ritual, and within a week into it, my hair completely stopped falling. And it wasn't just the body, like mentally, emotionally, I was just in a different place all of a sudden, in spite of all the stress that was going around us at that time, right? And it was just unbelievable. And even months later, you know, it's not just about being pain, but I noticed my hair, my nails were growing so fast. So I think the salons were still not open. So I was like trying to clip my nails. I'm like, wait, I just clipped my nails a few days ago. You know, I was like, how is this happening? And before I could go like 2-3 weeks without cutting my nails, they weren't growing that fast, right? Mm-hmm. Just a sign that something inside me had really transformed, like something had changed. So I just couldn't believe, and I strongly believe in the science of Ayurveda, but when you experience it firsthand to this degree, it was just a game changer. And I could not wait to bring this knowledge and the science out to the world.
Absolutely. And Ayurveda basically says the disease is due to an imbalance or stress in a person's consciousness. I looked it up because I was like, I keep hearing you saying this word. And you do this once a year still, every year?
I do. Yeah. So sometimes once a year, sometimes even twice a year. And that this, whatever I did over that month is really the inspiration behind the 28-day reset. That's in the book.
That's in the book. Right? And we're going to get into it. Yes.
Yeah. So that's what it inspired. I'm like, okay, how can I simplify it? How can I break it down so everyone can benefit from this and use it to jumpstart the health journey, bring their body back to balance whenever they need it? Like I used it.
Yes.
That's really the inspiration behind it.
Thank you for writing it. It's like, this worked for you and you had to share, like on top of practicing medicine. I know there's like thousands of people on your waiting list to like be seen by you. You also write this book that is so necessary. The book is Intentional Health, Detoxify, Nourish, and Rejuvenate Your Body into Balance. You talk about 7 ancient secrets, and I want to get into at least 3 of them with the time that I have you. You start with circadian rhythm, and that is very intentional. Because everything starts with that. Why do we need to look at circadian rhythm first? And what are we looking at there?
More therapy in a moment. Now this. Now back to therapy.
In my practice, the people I see tend to be relatively, you know, very health conscious and knowledgeable about nutrition. They're trying to do their right things, right? They're trying to eat a healthy diet, exercise, you know, get sleep. They're doing all the right things, yet they have issues. So it doesn't make sense for me to just say, you know, diet more, exercise more. I know that doesn't work. After seeing thousands of patients, I can tell you more is often not the answer. Sometimes the answer is less, right? And one of the fundamental things in Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, a lot of traditional medicines, the question is always that, are you in sync with the nature around you, right? That's how we evolved as human beings, that our cycles in our body, our internal body clock was always in tune with what was going on around us. We're very much in tune with the day-night cycle. We're in tune with different seasons. And we adapted to these changes. And that's how we stayed healthy. We've lost a lot of that because of our modern lifestyle, right? It has pros and cons. But I can tell you that a lot of the disease in Ayurveda, they say the root cause of a lot of disease is often that dyssynchrony between our internal body clock and the nature and the surroundings that we're in. So, and turns out that just a few years ago, the Nobel Prize of Medicine went to three scientists that discovered this whole new field called chronobiology, which basically means the science of the internal clock and how everything in our body is, you know, functioning according to this clock. So if this clock is out of sync, it's going to affect literally every single cell, right? So now we're recognizing that a lot of diseases we're seeing in the modern world are because of this imbalance or out of sync of our circadian rhythm, which is our internal body clock. And it makes sense for me to start the seven ancient secrets by saying, this is step number one. So I always joke with my patients and I say, you know, I don't necessarily care about your diet or when you go to the gym. Like, I care about when you eat, like the timing of these things matters so much more than just the food you're eating. Because metabolically speaking, our body is different at 9 a.m. versus 9 p.m.
Yeah.
So things it can do at 9 a.m., it's not going to do at 9 p.m., right? So that's why circadian rhythm, understanding what our circadian rhythm is, how to synchronize our internal body clock, our daily routine with what's going on around our in our environment is the first step to a health and wellness. So that's why circadian rhythm is the chapter number one.
Absolutely. And you mentioned metabolism. You say you don't care what your patients eat, you care when they eat. And obviously intermittent fasting is like blaring in my mind while you're talking. Just so you know, a little bit about me, I struggled very much with body image, multiple eating disorders, having restriction around food, like I can't eat at this time. For me, speaking just for myself, it's hard for me to abide by hours, and finally honoring my hunger cues and learning how to listen to my body again, it's hard for me. And I would say probably anyone that's dealt with stuff like that, like body image, multiple eating disorder type stuff, to put those kind of restrictions on again. So when I hear intermittent fasting or certain times, I'm like, meh, but I know that it's important. And I know that we need to give our metabolism time to rest and time off and not just when we're sleeping. And that makes sense for you to say, because your body can do things at 9 a.m. that it can't do at 9 p.m. I learned from you, food that is metabolized properly becomes nourishment. Food that is not becomes toxins and the root cause of disease. And it's all about, so it's not what you're eating, it's how your body is metabolizing. And there's no perfect diet. It's about matching your diet to your specific metabolism. Is there an ideal fasting window for all? Or is it like dependent on maybe your age or your gender that you should be eating in these certain hours of the day?
It's definitely customized, but there are some fundamental things that we can all learn from, right? So I'll tell you, around intermittent fasting, there's been a lot of noise. So there is a wrong way of doing intermittent fasting. There's a right way.
Oh.
So I will tell you the wrong way, which a lot of people do. So, you know, a lot of my patients come to me and say, Dr. Parikh, I do intermittent fasting. I do 14, 16 hours, but I'm still not losing weight. I still not, you know, I'm not getting the results. So what can I do? Do I need to do more fasting? And I say, no. And my first thing is, I want to make it very clear, fasting does not mean dieting. You are not supposed to cut calories. That is not the point of intermittent fasting. You're just shrinking the time in which you're eating does not mean you're cutting down on calories, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the mistakes people make, they wake up and they're like, I'm not really that hungry. You know, why do I waste, you know, why do I need more calories in the morning? Like, why am I wasting my time with breakfast? I'm just going
to
skip it. Like,
that's what I used to do. You're saving your calories for later.
Yes. So you skip breakfast, right? Mm-hmm. And then lunch comes around. You're like, I'm starting to get hungry, but you know what? I got willpower. I'm going to just eat a salad. I'm going to be good today. I'm just going to eat a salad, right? So you get your big salad, you eat it. And then 3 or 4 o'clock comes around. You're like, I am starving. Like, mm-hmm. give me a cookie now, right? You get hangry.
Yes.
And then dinner comes around and there goes all the willpower because your body's literally been starving the whole day. And then you eat a big dinner, right? And then you eat a little snack, a little sweet because you earned it. You've been good, you know.
It's like you had cameras on me in my 20s. That is exactly how I lived.
Yeah. And that's what we're all trained to do, right? That's what we're told, right? Calories matter and this and that, like willpower. It's you're not losing weight because you don't have the willpower, right? But let me tell you what our biology is really designed to do. So think about not the last 100 years, but before that, our ancestors, cavemen and women, right? What did we do? When we woke up, right? We probably hadn't had any food all night because you don't want to be out hunting at night. You're going to become someone else's meal if you do that, right? So automatically it was intermittent fasting. So when you woke up first thing in the morning, you don't want your body to pass out because you didn't drink any water all day, all night, or you didn't eat anything. So naturally, cortisol stress hormone starts to go up about a half an hour before we wake up. That increases our blood sugar, increases our blood pressure to get us through the morning until we are able to break our fast, find some food, right? So that took a couple of hours to go look for food. We didn't have a fridge full of orange juice back then or bagels, right? So that's how our body is designed. So when we break fast, that tells your body, hey, I'm not starving. I'm okay. Yes. Cortisol, the stress hormone's like, okay, I can start coming down. You got your food. You're not hungry. You're not starving. When we skip breakfast, your body's saying, I'm still starving. I'm going to starve. So cortisol still has to stay up. Stress hormone has to stay up to just make sure you don't pass out. Mm-hmm. And then carbs, you know, is a main source of energy, right? We need carbs. Carbs are not evil. There's good carbs and bad carbs, right? So there's potato chips, but there's also broccoli and whole wheat, you know, whole grain. So many things, right?
Nutrient rich. Yes.
So you need that energy to fuel you throughout the day.
Yes.
So when we're not getting that energy, those calories during the daytime period, when the sun is up, when our circadian rhythm is trying to metabolize food, the cortisol stays high. Yep. So what your body is saying, you're starving. I'm going to hold on to all these calories as fat. That's what I'm going to do.
Yes.
And then the cravings that happen, it's not because we have no willpower, because it's a survival mechanism designed into our brain. Mm-hmm. Your body, when it's in survival mode, is not going to crave a kale salad. It's just not going to. It wants a Snickers bar because your body's saying, I need that sugar for my brain to function, for my body to function. So it's not a lack of willpower, right? So that's what we're doing, is understanding the body's cues, understanding how our metabolism actually works. And when you eat according to it, so if you eat a nice, healthy breakfast, right? You eat some carbs and healthy carbs during lunch and you are satiated. Lunch is your biggest meal. Guess what's going to happen? You're not going to get that energy crash at 3 or 4 o'clock. You're right. Going to get hungry around 6 or 7, which is a good time to have dinner, earlier dinner. And you'll eat food that is lighter because you already got most of your calories earlier in the day.
Yeah, so you're not like starving, ravenous.
You're not craving.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're going to eat something simple, right? And then you'll sleep well throughout the night because your body's not digesting a big meal all night. It's actually focusing on detox, repair, and healing at night.
Yes.
And you wake up in the morning, you're actually starting to get hungry because you digested, metabolized that food. So now you're hungry in the morning, you eat that breakfast, now you're full of energy, ready for the day. It's a completely different picture.
And you answered my question. I was like, what if someone's listening? Like, I'm just not hungry in the morning. You're not hungry because you had a big meal for dinner too late and your body had to metabolize that. I just want to say everything that you just said, and I will be using it to promote this episode as a medical doctor, just hold so much weight here because I say the exact thing all the time. I struggled for literally 20 years, Dr. Parikh, from 16 to 36, thinking I was doing it the right way. I was only eating salads. I was saving my calories so I wouldn't eat when I was hungry. Your body shuts off. Your metabolism doesn't trust that you're going to eat again and it thinks you're starving. So the last thing it's going to do is burn because it's trying to keep you alive. And I had to figure it out the hard way. And so it's great to have an actual medical professional come on and be like, this is legit. Because this is what I say all the time. When I was living that way with restriction and stressing and obsessing, I had so much cortisol, that stress hormone that was making me hold on to everything. And I weighed 20 pounds more than I do now when I was trying to lose weight. And that's because of all the stress and not listening to my body. Now I just listen to my body and it's a hell of a lot easier and I'm maintaining my weight. So that message is gold here. Just thank you for breaking that down because we were taught calories in versus calories out and you don't eat and then you exercise more and you will lose weight, but you can get to a point where your body shuts off and your metabolism doesn't work anymore. So
our body is so intelligent. So much smarter than, you know, I'm not going to wither away. Like we can live 30 days without eating. How does that happen? You tell me, right? Your body will slowly slow down the metabolism to match the calories that are coming in. Yes. It has all these inbuilt mechanisms because as humans, our history has been very much, you know, attached to starvation, right? Mm. We've always lived like looking for food all the time. So our body is amazing at starvation. It knows exactly what to do and recognize it quickly. So us skipping that meal in the morning, it's just like, all right, starvation, I got to do all these things, right? It doesn't recognize that we're going to have a, you know, a party later at night. And
yeah, no, it's like, there's no food around. We have to like keep you alive. Yes. And you're thinking, I have a party at night, so I'm going to save my calories so I can eat all the things. And that's the worst thing you can do is go to a party hungry, because then you're going to eat all the bad things. Like, it's just not what women were taught for so long. Especially, I'm 42 and growing up, it was just not, it's calories in versus calories out. You eat salads, you don't snack, and you will lose, and you do cardio. And now like all I do is lift heavy and eat all the time. And I have maintained my weight this way. So just shifting how we think we're supposed to do it as women. And I feel like women are always trying to like find their best physical ideal. Maybe you're not doing intermittent fasting for weight loss, but I feel like a lot of women are. And it's just not, it's not the way you're doing it, and that you think is the right way is not the way. And I had to find out the hard way.
You did, unfortunately. And that's the reason I'm here, is because I see people struggling unnecessarily.
Yes.
It really is unnecessary.
I know.
And unfortunately, a lot of people are trying to make money by capitalizing on this struggle.
Yeah.
Right? By saying, use this method, that method. And all they're trying to do is sell you stuff and guide you in the wrong direction. So you buy their supplements or their diet or whatever it is, right?
Yes.
Not grounded in science. Mm-mm. So that's why my life's work is, let me give you the science. I'm telling you, the cutting edge Western medicine is telling you calories, you know, all of this, cutting calories doesn't work. It slows down your metabolism. Chronobiology is far more important. And this is all the latest science. The gut microbiome, which we're going to talk about, like, these things matter, right? Mm-hmm. And then we're adding a layer of the wisdom that's been around for thousands of years. So this is how we come full circle. And we're just relearning things that have been around for thousands of years and saying, that's the truth. That's the ultimate way of understanding our body and working with it, not against it.
And you're just putting it all in one book that is so fabulous. Like, you're giving it to us right here in these steps. Last thing about metabolism, we mentioned it, the 28-day reset. Can you just touch on what that is?
Yeah. So the 28-day reset, the whole premise is that we're allowing our body to detox. And the word allow is very important, because to detox, we don't need to drink green juice. We don't need to starve ourselves. We don't need coffee enemas, right? It's actually, the body is perfectly capable of detoxing, nourishing, rejuvenating on its own. The problem is you often get in the way. Right? We think detox means taking 20 different supplements, doing these aggressive things, when all your body is saying, just slow down, right? Literally slow down, eat simple foods, simplify your routine, be less stressed, get more sleep, and allow me to do my job.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing in 28 days. We're doing a simplified diet. So one of the concepts of simplifying a diet is something called mono diet. All that means is you're sticking to one protein, one carb, and one fat for a few days to make it very easy for your body to digest, right? So if I'm eating, so imagine eating a soup or like a stew that has some quinoa, some vegetables, maybe some lentils, maybe some chicken stock or something like that, much easier to digest, right? We eat in a way when we're sick, what do? Right? We want the chicken soup. We want something simple. We're not like, I want a hamburger right now, right?
When lasagna.
You're sick, you're just like, no, you're like, puke,
yeah.
Right?
If you think about that. True.
So because your body is like, simplify your diet, because I want to kill this bacteria that's making you sick.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now what we're saying, let's simplify our diet so our body can detox and reset itself. So that's what we're doing in 28 days. We're allowing for our metabolism to shift gears instead of just digesting and, you know, burning calories or something like that. We're actually focusing on detox. We're doing that by not starving ourselves. Our body still needs energy. We're just giving it in a form that's very easy to digest, because digesting food takes up a lot of energy. So you have to decide, do you want your body to spend all its energy on just digesting this big, heavy meal? Or do you want it to store that energy and use it to actually detox and repair?
Absolutely. And speaking of starving yourself, I have to ask you about something my sister and brother-in-law do, a 72-hour water fast. I know with your 28-day detox, you ease in and you ease out. So part of the 28 days is like kind of getting used to it and then coming back out of it. They just do water for 72 hours. And they talk to me, they're like, yeah, after 24 hours, your body starts using like, I don't get it. I'm afraid of it. And I'm like, I'm going to ask Dr. Preek, because there's no ease in and ease out. It's 72-hour water fast. What in the hell is that? Should they be doing that?
So I like fasting, but that is not the right way. You have to ease in. So the whole point of 28-day reset, the detox is only 1 week. We were using one whole week just to get your body into the detox mode. We're using one whole week to just get out of detox.
Okay.
And the last week is to reap the benefits from everything we just did, right? So here's what happens. If I all of a sudden, you know, normally I'm eating like, you know, 3-4 times a day, snacking or whatever. And then all of a sudden I go into completely fasting. What is your body thinking? Hey, starvation, something's up, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. Let me increase my cortisol, right? Versus if you're used to doing intermittent fasting for 14 hours at night, where you eat your dinner around 6 or 7, you eat your breakfast around 9, 14 hours, your body's like, I do this every night. You're not starving. This is just what your routine is.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start burning the fat at night and still you get the calories, right? There's a big difference. So when you ease into fasting, so typically what I say, everyone can do about 14 hours at night. That's doable, at least 5 days a week, right? We can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can add on what I personally do. I'll do a 16 or 18 hour fast 1 day a week. So basically what that means, I'll do like an early dinner, or like a very light dinner around 3 or 4, and then I won't eat anything till breakfast. So I keep my breakfast time the same. The dinner is what gives you a longer fasting window.
Okay.
So then my body's like, okay, I'm getting used to this. So once in a while, you're focusing more on detox. I can handle this. So by easing into it, you can get much better results. So my concern is something aggressive like a 72-hour fast can be a lot for so many people. As a doctor, the first oath I took was do no harm, right? Mm-hmm. So I always say the years of medical training, the experience I have, is not meant to tell you what to do, right? A ChatGPT can probably do a better job of telling you stuff, right?
Yeah.
My training, my experience is there for me to tell you what not to do. To tell someone what not to do takes way more experience, mm-hmm. way more training and understanding than telling someone what to do.
Okay.
Right? So that's why don't jump into it. It's aggressive. It's not meant for most people. There's no harm in going about it slowly. You'll get much better sustainable results.
Fabulous. I want to get into gut microbiome because it's where I found the most like just life-changing gems. And I want to get in there and deep dive into gut microbiome. I learned from you, all diseases start in the gut.
More therapy in a moment. Now this.
Guys, I have found the magic. And who would I be to not share the magic with my loyal therapy listeners? I have been using Rejuvelift Beauty, a tightening clay that you tap wherever you need it. I use it on the little 11s between my eyebrows, the bags under my eyes, my crow's feet. You tap it, you sit for 4 minutes, and the results last for up to 7 hours. If you have a girl's night, a work event, a date night, make Rejuvelift the first step in your beauty routine. It goes on before makeup. It lasts for up to 7 hours. It is magic. And right now, Therapy listeners get 20% off at rejuveliftbeauty.com using code Therapy. Therinpy, 20% off. Rejuveliftbeauty.com. That's Rejuvelift beauty.com. You're welcome.
Now back to therapy.
That's exactly what, you know, Eastern medicine, ancient medicine has been saying for years, for decades, for millennia, right? And now Western medicine's like, all the latest research that's coming out is saying gut microbiome is involved with diabetes, heart disease, anxiety, depression, cancers, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, autoimmune diseases, food allergies, like name it, right? Every mm-hmm. single thing now we're like, oh, wait, it doesn't just start in the brain. It doesn't just start in the joints. It's actually starting in the gut. And why is that? The gut is our engine of the body, essentially. It has the biggest immune system, right? The biggest part of the immune system is actually in the gut. And it also has one of our biggest detox organs, which is the gut microbiome. So we talk about toxins, right? When we talk about metabolizing hormones, when we talk about immune system, when we talk about digestion, nutrients, everything, and even our mood, 80% of serotonin, the happy hormone, is actually made in the gut, not in the brain.
Mm.
So the gut is actually our second brain.
Yeah.
So I cannot leave gut microbiome out if I'm talking about health and well-being, right? It doesn't mean like you have to have gut issues, like you have to have something wrong to address your gut. No, everyone has to pay attention to your gut.
I think I learned listening to you, there was like a Chinese study that there is a connection between gut microbiome and your personality.
Yes. Like, isn't that crazy?
It's so interesting because my daughter has, we're dealing with some things. She's 8 and I think it is a lot to do with her diet. It kind of like validates where I was going with that, that has a connection. Like you're not thinking of how much it affects the gut microbiome, your personality.
Yes, because you're depending on what we're eating, we're also feeding the gut bacteria, right? So the healthier we eat, the more good bacteria we have, more serotonin, more dopamine, the better our mood, our energy, our concentration. The worse we eat, more inflammatory bacteria, right? Yeah. So less of those things. So, our moods get affected, our energy level, ability to focus, so especially with kids, right? When we talk about ADHD, anxiety, and all these issues that our kids are dealing with these days, perhaps we need to be taking a closer look at the gut health and looking at the diet we're feeding them, right? Because it all of that is making such a big difference. Because the food that our kids are eating now is very different than what you and I grew up with, to what our parents grew up with, right? So the chemicals, the additives, all these things
pesticides
are sneaking into our foods. Yes. So it's not, as much as we try to do our best, we need to be very vigilant about these things and put it, and much higher in our priority list than just saying, so what? They're just eating these chicken nuggets or whatever. Fine, once in a while, not a problem.
Yeah.
But we have to just, just because they're kids doesn't mean we have to wait for them to get sick to focus on these things, right?
Yes, and
we
not even just eating what they want. Like my daughter, my son will like egg a waffles. Like he's just, my daughter, I would be like, she's eating better. And I'm using quotes because she would make oatmeal every morning. But I found this article recently and it's not organic oatmeal. It's just like the Quaker maple and brown sugar. And I do the lower sugar oatmeal. She makes it herself. And I'm like, oh, oatmeal every morning. They are spraying pesticides that is linking reproductive health issues to kids. And she was eating it not even just once a day. Like she would eat it for breakfast and then come home from school and be like, can I make some oatmeal? So I'm thinking like, look at my daughter who just eats oatmeal. So she was eating it every day. And the other things that she likes is the General Mills, like cereal. And it was the same, it's not organic. So they're spraying a pesticide, linking it to reproductive issues for kids later on. And I texted my husband, and I was like, no more. I was like, throw it out. Like she eats it so much. And I wasn't thinking that it would harm her because you think you're eating healthy and it is harming them.
Exactly. So that's the reason when I talk about gut microbiome, I'm not giving you the generic eat probiotics. Of course, that's important, right? I can tell you over and over again, the biggest threat to our gut microbiome is not a lack of yogurt or kimchi. It's the threat from all these environmental toxins and pesticides and stuff that just not enough awareness is out there. So in the book, I highlight, again, do no harm first, right? I want you to be conscious of what foods you should be buying organic, which foods you don't need to buy organic. How should you be washing your fruits and vegetables so you don't get exposed to a lot of these chemicals? What foods like, soy, oats, sometimes corn, these are the top things that you absolutely have to buy organic because they contain some of the highest amount of pesticides, right?
Yes.
Even though these things are healthy and we want to eat more of it, right? So that's what I focus on in the book. It's not just, eat this superfood, that superfood. Trust me, there's no one suffering because of lack of superfoods. That's not what the problem is here.
Yeah. And you just made me think too, it's like, you think you're doing right because you're eating fruit, but is the fruit in season? Because your gut microbiome has seasonality, which I learned from you. And why is that important? Antioxidants?
Exactly. So the more seasonal the fruits are, the fresher they are, the higher amounts of antioxidants. And imagine, their foods are growing right now. It's wintertime, right? So if we're eating winter foods, they also have the nutrients and minerals and everything that our body needs at that time.
Yes.
Right? That's how we evolved, right? Versus now it's middle of winter. And if I'm looking for, say, strawberries and blueberries, they're not growing around me, right? Where are they coming from? They're coming from across the world. And if I need my strawberries to look nice and healthy and make the trip across the world, what do I need? It needs a lot of pesticides. It needs a lot of these chemicals so they don't rot.
Yes.
So that's the other thing is if I'm going to my local farmer's market and buying what's in season, eating that, right? It's better for environment. They don't have to use a lot of pesticides because literally they're just, getting the broccoli
doesn't travel.
That they just
right.
threw. It doesn't travel, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's going straight into my fridge and I'm going to eat it. It's high in nutrients, high in antioxidants, way less than pesticides. So eating seasonally now is not just about getting the nutrients, also avoiding a lot of these pesticides and taking care of our environment as well, reducing that carbon emission that we're getting from getting our foods from across the world. So So eating seasonal has become one of my passions. Like, it addresses so many things, not just good for you, for the environment, for your community, for your farmers, like everything. Yeah. So by just making that one decision, you're doing so much good.
Absolutely. I want to share with you while we're talking about like the mind and gut connection, something that I have just been geeking out on. I feel like you'll feel the same way. I had a swab to test if I had any genetic mutations, and it looks at things where maybe your body can't process certain things, and it tells you this has a reaction in your gut or in your mind. And I'm learning about how gene mutations start, like there's a whole chain, and things that start at the bottom are obviously going to be more harmful, because if your body's not getting something at the bottom, then it's not passing it along. I found out that I had to write it all down. I have a genetic break that makes it hard for me to take folic acid and convert it into the usable form for my body. So my body doesn't produce methylfolate, and it's one of the most prevalent nutrients in the human body. And I'm not able to convert it into a usable form for my brain and gut. So I think I'm getting folate. I'm getting what I'm supposed to do, but my body, until now, I didn't know that it doesn't know how to convert it. So it causes a break and other things down the line. Like we talk about, it's the worst genetic mutation to have, but the easiest to fix with supplementation. So I am now taking methylfolate, which I never took in my entire life, and learning that this thing, like you get like a red, if it's like a horrible thing and your body's only getting like 0 to 10% of what it's supposed to, and it's down low on the chain, to have something red there and just changing that or supplementing there will just have a profound effect on the rest of everything. Like it affects my mind, it affects my gut. And Dr. Parikh, when it told me like what having a deficiency in methylfolate does for your body, it's my whole life. It's like anxiety, yes. OCD, high drive, like very like go, go, go. And you have to succeed in all of these things. And I don't know, I've only been doing it supplementing for 3 weeks now, but it all could have been that my body just wasn't processing this and I didn't know. So it is blowing my mind. I don't know if you know much about gene mutation and like deficiencies in those things that affects your mind and your gut.
This is something I do a lot with my patients, because I can tell you, especially when someone comes to me with anxiety, depression, ADHD, this is the one thing I focus on, because studies have universally saying now that studies have done, what they've done is they extracted fluid around the brain and measured the level of folate around the brain. And what they found was depression symptoms, anxiety, a lot of these things were directly correlated with the level of folate in their brain fluid. Hmm. So what they did was they treated people with very high dose methylfolate. Guess what happened? The amount of folate around the brain went up into a normal range or better than normal range, and people felt so much better.
Oh my God.
So now one of the treatments for depression is actually high dose methylfolate.
What is high dose to you? Like what is... I wonder if I'm doing enough of it.
Yes. So the high dose we use for treatment doses tends to be around 15 milligrams.
Okay.
Right. So we always gradually increase it, because more is not always better, because some people, because it depends on the level in the brain. If you have very, very low levels, that's the level you need, right?
I'm so low. I'm red. Like some things are yellow that it's like your body's getting about 40% of what it needs. Red is 0 to 10%. And that's where my methylfolate was.
Exactly. And one good thing about folate is it is a water-soluble vitamin. So there is very, you know, hardly any risk of overdosing it. So if you take too much, then your body's just going to pee it out.
Oh, okay.
And we can also do blood tests to get a better idea. So sometimes I test just regular folate levels in the blood, or sometimes I'll check something called red blood cell level of folate. Sometimes that's more accurate in some people. And that can give you an idea, are you getting the right dose or not, if you need to tweak it.
Okay. Right. I'm going by like, I'm waiting to just feel good. And then I'll know, like maybe I should. And is that the one that you need to be taking with vitamin B to like be able to absorb it? Vitamin B?
Yeah. So folate is one of the B vitamins that needs to be in the methylated form for people who have that genetic variation, but a lot of other vitamins also, such as B12 is another one. When it's taken in methylated form, you can get much better absorption. So I typically recommend people take either just methylfolate, or I'll just say take methyl B complex. So it's methylated forms of all B vitamins.
Oh my gosh. And I wonder how many people are affected by this and just don't even know. Or you think like, or so you know that it's a thing. So you're like, let me just Google things that are high in folate and eat that. But your body is not like converting it. And I didn't know. And it's just, it has been like just so revelatory. I feel like I should be an affiliate for something with genetic mutation, because I want to like tell everyone that it's like can change your life. And you didn't realize. You think you're eating the right way, and your body needs the methylated form of it. So
yeah, I'm not one to just give people bags of supplement, but there are some selective supplements that I feel like can be life-changing for people, right? So let's be selective and really get you things that your body truly needs. Yes. These are simple blood tests and things you can do to address, you know, what you need, how much you need, too much, too little. We can just track it with a simple blood test, and the majority of insurances cover it. Mm-hmm. So why aren't we doing it? Because most doctors are just not trained in looking at it, right? So that's why we have to be better advocates for ourselves.
100%. I hope that listening to that inspires someone to advocate for themselves. I want to end it with like the mind-body connection and stress. Talk about the 20-minute daily ritual.
More therapy in a moment. Now this. Now back to therapy.
So a lot of great things that you learn within the 28-day reset, right? It's not about just doing this reset once and just going back to your usual life. The idea is that you pick things that really worked well for you during the 28-day reset, and you just make it part of your daily routine. So you can continue to reap the benefits of the reset for not just a few days or weeks, for years to come, right? That's the whole point. And we say, yes, you can, you know, you cannot take care of your car and just go to the mechanic when something falls apart. But how about you took care of your car and got all the regular maintenance and did all the right things? You have much better longevity of your car. Same thing with the body. If we just spend 20 minutes or a day to focus on things that matter most, so whether it's in the morning setting an intention for the day, I can tell you it's going to change how you handle stress throughout the day if you just take a few minutes of your day in the morning to say, today, this is what's going to happen. This is what I'm bringing to the table today, right? There's completely changing the tone of how your emotions, your mind, your body, everything's going to react to situations.
Yeah.
And studies have validated that. Then we talk about a few things that you learn in 28-day reset about taking care of your oral microbiome. So oral health. Oil pulling, tongue scraping. These things have been around for thousands of years and can be amazing for your oral health, because remember, the gut microbiome starts in the mouth, right? So taking care of that gut microbiome in the mouth every single day is so key. It's not just about popping a bunch of probiotics. It's actually taking care of your mouth. That's step number one. So it takes 2 minutes to do, right? If you do it every morning, look, amazing things going to happen for your gut microbiome. So that's the reason why what I'm recommending, I'm breaking it down into minutes, right? Because sometimes if I tell you to do a bunch of things, you know, with my patients and myself, I'm like, oh my God, that's too much. I can't handle it.
You're like, oh.
When I break it down to like, it's going to take me 30 seconds. You're like, oh yeah, that I can do that.
Yeah.
Right? So don't think about the number of to-do things. Let me break it down for you in seconds and minutes. And you're like, oh, I can do this. And all you have to do during the day, I'm not even telling you to do much. It's just in the beginning of the day, at the end of the day. During the day, I'm telling you before you eat your breakfast, lunch, dinner, just take a minute or two to take a few deep breaths. And if you're religious, if you believe in this, I strongly believe in this, like just say a little prayer or just express gratitude that you have food in front of you. And the food that you're about to eat is going to nourish you. It's going to be good for you and you're going to enjoy it, right? Just setting that intention before you eat. How many seconds does that take? Not many, but how your body is going to receive that food, how it's going to digest the food, how it's going to process the nutrients in it will be completely different.
Wow.
So simple things we can do to channel into that mind-body energy, to tap into that circadian rhythm, to optimize your gut microbiome, everything we're talking about, the 7 ancient secrets, you can do it in 20 minutes every single day.
Absolutely. And the final thing, like speaking of breath, the final chapter, Breath of Life, you say the number one most important thing we can do for our well-being is learn how to breathe. How do we breathe?
So we breathe like we used to breathe when we were little babies. You know, when you look at babies, right, they're belly breathers. They really engage their belly and engage their diaphragm when they're breathing. But as we get older, you know what happens? We start holding our breath. We start making our breaths very shallow, right? Because we're so engrossed. We're so busy doing everything else. The last thing we have time for is to breathe. Forget it. That's for amateurs, right?
Yes.
But what studies are showing is that one nerve called the vagus nerve, V-A-G-U-S, vagus nerve, controls our mind-body connection. And the way we tap into this connection to optimize this one nerve that helps us get out of fight and flight, does all these amazing things for us, a simple way to activate it is simply to take nice deep breaths, right? Okay. Engaging our belly muscles, not taking shallow breaths, not holding our breath. So a lot of my patients, what I do is train them how to breathe properly. And I train them to breathe for 5 minutes in the morning, in the evening, doing those deep belly breaths. That's a fundamental thing in yoga, is learning how to breathe. It's not about turning into a pretzel or a headstand.
It's
number
not.
One thing in yoga is breathing. So yeah. In yoga, they say you master your breath. That's how you master your body. And when you master your body, you master your mind. So the first step in getting there is mastering your breath. And your breath will give you away every single time. Your breath changes depending on what you're thinking, your emotions, your thoughts, everything is in real time changing your breath. I'm actually wearing a device right now called Leaf. It actually measures something called heart rate variability. So it's not your heart rate necessarily, it's heart rate variability, which is a measure of how stressed or relaxed you are. So I'm wearing this device. So when I'm holding my breath or not breathing properly, when I'm in that fight and flight, it registers it and gives me a little vibration. So then I'm like, all right, I got to take nice deep breaths.
Wow.
And it's been amazing for me to see, you know, what things are actually making me stressed.
Yeah.
What things actually make me very excited and happy. So it's been an amazing device. This is where I love combining technology with, you know, ancient science. It just validates everything. And I'm like, wow, this is what's happening. Talking to you, my numbers are great. I'm loving our conversation.
Yeah. You're like, mine would be like all the time. Like if I'm in a workout class and the instructor will be like, remember to breathe. I'm like, I wasn't breathing. Like, oh my God. Yeah. I wasn't breathing. Like I'm always holding my breath. That would be, we geek out over the same things. Like I love the validation of be like, yeah, this is this. And it all comes together and it makes sense. Your book is so valuable. And I just have to say, you're just so relatable. Like I talked to some doctors and they have books and it's great information, but the way that you deliver it and you're so like personable, I appreciate your time. Loved talking to you. The book is Intentional Health, Detoxify, Nourish, and Rejuvenate Your Body into Balance. It's available now. Where can people get more from you?
So you can check out my website, intentionalhealth.io, or you can follow me on Instagram at intentionalhealth_.
Thank you for all of these gems and tips. I cannot wait to share it with my audience, and I cannot wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much, Erin, for having me. I have clearly loved the conversation. I have proof to show you that I've loved it.
She has the receipts.
If you are not subscribed to Therapy with Erin Washington, please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this. Please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts so that more people can find it. And thank you for listening and being along on this journey with me. If you have any subjects that you want me to talk about, follow me on Instagram at I am Erin Washington. Follow the show at Therapy with Erin Washington. And I will see you next week for more Therapy.